Rowan, thank you so much for making the time to chat today. I'm super excited to have you here. I'm gonna jump right into the thick of it. As a dad, I've been in the dad life for about 5 years now, so I'm still early with my dad jokes. They don't land always. The youngest two don't even know what I'm talking about half the time. But like, you're known for dad jokes, so I have to
Yeah.
start with a dad joke. Got to give us one of your best, give us one of your favorites, one of your all-time greatest hits.
So I think this only works with some folks. My kids don't get this one, and the whole purpose of a dad joke is that they're
Don't
not supposed to land, right? Like, or they're supposed to be dead on arrival. But one of my favorites, and I get to use this a lot because when I'm out with my team, it's a location joke. Did you know that it was illegal to laugh in Hawaii?
I didn't know
Everything
that.
has to be aloha.
That's amazing. That is brilliant. Well played. Well played. I don't know what type of sound effects I have in the
Yeah. Yeah,
past.
just silence is probably the best. Yeah.
Yeah. But let me give some of the listeners, some of the folks who are actually listening to us, hoping to get some advice into marketing and not how to drop a good dad joke or two. A bit of a rundown on how we connected. I was at Ascent. Rowan gave a talked about financial, operational combination of metrics, how to think about this, how the two functions within an organization, finance and marketing, should not view each other as the enemy, but instead should be really a true partner, and was giving some amazing insight around how anyone in the GTM function, how anyone in sales and revenue at large should be thinking about their planning, how they should be working with their finance team, how they should be planning their finance team. And when I heard him talk, I was like, this is it. Like, this is the conversation that doesn't happen enough amongst marketers. We're always talking about, oh, let's come up with these cool creative content ideas, and not enough into the weeds. So I appreciated your talk. I think you nailed it. I know you've got a podcast and all of that good stuff, so I'll be sure to include that in the show notes so folks can listen to it and hear more from you. But I want to jump right into the weeds and give the listeners as much value as possible. You talked about there being a difference between like financial, commercial, and operational metrics. How do you think about those metrics, and how would you articulate it to someone who is in the CMO suite or is trying to figure out how they should talk to finance about the efforts they want to invest, but they don't know what metrics to bring to the table and how to bring them to the table?
Yeah, I would start by saying we believe that there's three classifications of metrics, and that you need to go and classify your business metrics into these areas. And the first and most important area is financial metrics, and they're things that live on your P&L statement. They live on your balance sheet. They're critical when it comes to, if you're a public company reporting to the street, they're the things that your CFO would give guidance on. It's things like revenue, like gross margin. It's things like all of those really important financial metrics that effectively everyone gets to assess your business on. The second bucket is commercial metrics, and they're typically things that guide your business and lead us to financial metrics. In our world as marketers, that's things like, how much pipeline are we building? What's our pipeline to quota coverage ratio? What is our budget for the year? Like, you don't tell the street that, but they're commercial metrics. They're important for you to understand. And then the third bucket, which is where marketers mostly get stuck living in, is what I call operational metrics. And in our world, that could be, net new leads, MQLs. It could be, if you're in a product-led growth world, number of free trials, all those different types of metrics. Sales operational metrics are things like, activities per day, those types of things. How many demos did we do that week? They're not commercial metrics because there's no real financial number attached to them, but they're important for all of us to understand because they drive up that value chain, right? And they're really good predictors for us of how we get up to the value chain. I think the big value I find by categorizing your metrics in this way is you can then start to say, well, where am I having my conversation? Why am I speaking to my CFO regularly about operational metrics?
Right.
Operational metrics as a go-to-market leader should be for the go-to-market teams.
Right.
You should be speaking to your CFO and your board and your exec team in commercial and financial metrics.
Right.
And when you start changing and thinking about it in that way, you actually change the conversation that you're having internally. Yeah. And your team can live in all of the operational metrics and you can manage the team by them. Yeah. But cross-functionally with your sales leadership, with your exec team, you want to be talking mostly commercial and financial because they're the things that really everyone cares about.
Right, right. For the marketer who is intimidated by the idea of financial metrics and talking about them, what would be the advice that you would give them around, like, where do they start? Where do they start?
Yeah. So the first place you should start is if you have one, not everyone has one. And this is, I think, one of the fundamental problems is your finance business partner. Typically, they sit inside a function of the CFO called FP&A, Financial Planning and Analysis. And they're typically the person responsible for helping you in the business, run your business, better predict your business, organize your business in a financially kind of highly performant way.
Right.
Unfortunately, for the Office of Finance, forever, they're a very underfunded team. We think marketing that we're underfunded. Right. you know, I'll tell you what people don't like spending money on is G&A expenses, right? Sure. And so finance is, you know, we need to recognize they're often a very underfunded team. They have to live frugally because they're supposed to be the custodians of frugality.
Right.
And and so you may not have a business partner. And so in that case, then I would say there's plenty of really great external resources to go and learn from. There's some really good courses out there. If you're in the SaaS space, there's a gentleman by the name of Ben Murray called the SaaS CFO. He has some great courses on metrics and guides and puts out some fantastic content. There's the team at Benchmarket, Ray Reich and team, that put out a bunch of content around SaaS metrics. And then, you know, depending on your industry, I would then look to industry guides where they talk about a lot of the financial metrics of those organizations.
Very cool. So a lot of people right now are in the thick of annual planning and developing the plans around their marketing efforts. What would be the steps that a good, great CMO or someone who's aspiring to hit that seat be thinking about when it comes to building a plan that they can actually articulate to finance and get a thumbs up and actually working like collaborate on together?
Yeah. So the first thing, and this is, I think, where a lot of us get stuck, is we need to understand the company goals. And how are they changing between this year and next year? How have they changed in the last, you know, 9 to 12 months? I'm sure no one in listening right. has not had their goals change, right? Like all of our goals have changed over the last 18 months. And we have to have the realization that they're going to change more frequently. You know, the economy is not exactly going to become certain again anytime soon, right? Certainty is kind of out the window. So we need to just understand that whatever we do now, we need to build with resilience and agility in mind. But we need to start with the company goals. And why that's important is because when you're communicating back, you're not explaining marketing goals. Right. You're explaining how marketing is going to contribute and support the company goals as defined by the company. And that's the exec team. So if you don't have a seat at that table, find someone who does. Ask, what are the company goals? Are we anchoring to profitability or growth? Are we, like, you know, what's our kind of fiscal responsibility look like next year? What are we, where are we growing? Where are we sunsetting things? What's changing?
Right.
Yeah. And so if you start with those company goals in mind, then you can then say, okay, well, this is how marketing needs to execute on those goals. And this is the resources and dependencies and requirements we can fulfill them. It's much easier to have that conversation than it is to say, well, we're coming and we're going to do 30 in-person events next year and we're going to create a blog.
Right.
And the first question you get is, to what end?
Right.
And so if you start with the end goal in mind, like the company objective is to do this, and then you say, and we're doing this, this, and this, and that's going to help us long term, people start to understand the framing a little better.
And how would you bring those metrics to the conversation? So let's say we're going to do 30 events. What's the metric that you should be talking about to finance? Is it talking about revenue? Is it pipeline? Are you talking about how many leads, how many MQLs, SQLs, how many people are going to show by? Is it impressions on our signage? Like, how detailed should we get, or how macro should we get? Where does your head go in terms of the metrics that should be coming out of this plan for finance's knowledge?
Yeah, so I would be reporting on, so number one, how are you being measured today within yourself and finance and your exec team? And and if you're being measured on things like operational metrics, like leads, then you're going to have to slowly start shifting that conversation to start getting measured by more of the operational metrics that are well understood and well known within the organization. Right. And I'm sure you have them. In my organization, I am measured by cost per dollar of pipeline. And that's from my overall plan. And I'm expected to get more efficient more frequently. So in that example, I would say we're doing 30 events. It's the cost is going to be this, and the cost per outcome we're seeking against these key metrics are X, Y, and Z. Z. So that's how I would be breaking it down. I would be building that model with all my operational metrics.
Right.
But I would not be presenting the model with all the operational metrics. I'd be presenting the model's output to the CFO and to the sales team. And often we get stuck as marketers in improving our work. And so we present the model and we start with our operational metrics and we're like, well, we're going to get these leads and they're going to convert at this rate and we're going to do it. Shortcut, go with brevity team, right? When we're copywriting, we get told, with brevity in mind. So presenting metrics, present with brevity in mind. If they ask, then slowly peel back the layers. But I would actually start with the end result, which is, hey, we're going to drive this amount of pipeline. And it's going to result in, you know, based on history, these conversion rates for this amount of revenue for this investment. And if you can consistently do that across your whole plan, then people just start trusting the plan. But if you keep talking operational metrics, A, you're disconnecting from the way that they resource and invest in you, which is dollars. So you're creating a gap for them.
No, that's fair. If you were giving advice to someone who's in a culture where actually doing the reporting hasn't actually been something that they've cared about, like there's two scenarios in which I see this often. It's like the hyper growth startups, they get a bunch of money. They're able to like just go all in and grow. Now the market's different and they're like, hey, marketing team, what do you think we should do? Or an organization just caught wave of an amazing trend and they had amazing growth. They bring in some leaders and the leaders came potentially even from traditional metrics driven cultures. And now they're like, why doesn't anyone measure stuff here? Like from your perspective in a culture where metrics have not historically mattered, but you as the leader in marketing want metrics to matter. How would those conversations start?
Well, I would, again, start with goals in mind, right? So, you know, if you're the leader or even if you're the leader of a function, ask your CMO, ask your sales leader. Let's say you're a demand gen leader and your CMO's not maybe metrics driven. Maybe, you know, they're a great messaging and strategist and they're doing, you know, that's their skill set. There's plenty of them and they're awesome marketers. And, you know, maybe they've come from these hyper growth organizations you just talked about. So I would sit down and say, well, what are my goals? And you might hear things like my goals are operational metrics. And then it's like, okay, so then ask the next question. Okay, so that's supposed to then do what, right? To what end? To what end? Keep asking the question until you get to, well, we've got to drive 10 million in net new bookings next year. And how much are we responsible for that? Well, marketing is on the hook for 50% of it. Sales is on the hook for 30% of it. And you know, our channel business is going to do 20. So we're on the hook for 50%. So 50% of that 10 million. So 5 million is my number, right? Yeah, it is. All right. So how am I going to get there? So start with that, which is company goal, 10 million. Marketing goal is 5 million. And we can sit here and debate whether we should split up those goals or not. But that's how your org's doing it. And then say, okay, well, this is how I'm going to do it based on what I know about the math of my business today. And as soon as you can break it down and keep asking that annoying question, to what end, to what end, to what end, eventually you'll get to that kind of final number.
Yeah.
And that's the goal. That's the thing that you need to do. And and no manager ever is going to be upset about you presenting a plan or a strategy with the end goal in mind.
Right.
No one's going to get upset about that. They might get upset when you say, well, the resources you've given me aren't enough to hit that goal.
Right.
But then you're having the real conversation about, okay, well, how do we change? Do we change the resource investment? Do we change the way that we execute? Do we change the goal? Maybe the goal's not changeable. But you're getting to the real debate that you need to have rather than just going through the motions.
Right. I love it. I seen a post from you recently speaking on this annual plan topic around like, hey, folks, is your annual plan 100-page slide snooze fest? Here's your alarm clock. Let's wake up and do things a little bit differently and all that. When it comes down to it, 100 slides is like a consultant's dream. Like I'm a marketer. I'll tell you, I will be I love an 100 slide only because I get to charge more. But like in a realistic lens, I hear you 100%. No one pulls out that PDF with 100 slides and actually dives into it. So what advice do you give folks? And I think you said brevity, like that's the key that we talk about in marketing. Why don't we talk about it also as like when we're doing our planning, where do you sit on the annual plan? How should it be brought to life? What's your approach to like creating one that gets approved? Do you keep it short and sweet, one pager? Like what, how deep do you get or how short do you get?
Well, again, I think this is like, you've got to go through the, you know, I forget the exact quote and who said it, but the beauty of planning isn't in the plan itself. It's in the planning, right? Mm-hmm. It allows you to go and think of all of the things that could possibly happen. So you are going to go and build a bunch of different strategy documents, a bunch of different plans, and you're going to have these operational models that support everything. But when you're getting to that final moment of communicating that plan to someone, the brevity is best. I love the old Serious Decisions plan on a page template. Right. Company goal, marketing goal. Here's how we're getting to it. Some of the things I love about that is you can use terminology to say, you know, we're innovating in this area, or we're growing in this area, or we're optimizing, or we're divesting.
Yeah,
that clarity that comes from forcing you to do that little thing, you know, putting the plan in a page, that's so important for your team. So as a leader, like if I can say to my team, hey guys, we're optimizing this thing. Mm. Like our goal is the same, but we need it to get cheaper. And here's how we're doing it. They love hearing that. They love just understanding that, oh, okay, so, you know, the goal might be staying flat, but it's all about efficiency now. Whereas last year it might have been about growing, or hey, we're sunsetting this program, this market that we used to sell into, we're going to wind that down. Oh, I love hearing that because it's like I know where to focus my attention as a team.
Right.
Do you know who loves that? Leadership, because it's aligned to their company goals. Right. So it's a great way to get your plan approved. And if and if they don't like it, then you're debating about, okay, well, are we not sunsetting? Like you get to the heart of the question really quickly. Right. And so I love that template. You know, V2 MOM is the old, you know, Salesforce use that heavily. All of those different types of methodologies work really, really well for communicating your plan because they're super helpful. Everyone can quickly understand and organize around them. Your company might have OKRs as their methodology.
Right.
Use OKRs. Right. It's, you know.
For sure. The methodology, use which one works for you.
Yeah.
For yourself, like you've been in the CMO seat, from your perspective, which one is your go-to? Like, which is the one that you rely on the most when you're doing your planning?
Yeah, we use OKRs as a company here at Planful. And so I use OKRs. I think that's the best way to roll that out amongst the team. And, you know, it allows us to be quite simple in the way that we communicate. I have in my plan 6 key goals and multiple key results under each goal. And then there's, you know, hundreds of programs that sit under under each of those goals, but 6 key goals, and I wouldn't go, you know, between 5 and 10, because anything more than that, people don't know what to do.
Right. So I'm going to go against podcast best practice here, but I'm going to lean heavily into a shameless plug on Planful for this one. Like, I'd love, we're talking about planning, we're talking about annual planning. Where does Planful actually fit in my toolkit as a marketer, trying to plan my marketing efforts, trying to get financial buy-in? Like, where does it fit in the toolkit as like a solution that I would use?
Yeah, so it's one of only a couple of tools that actually help marketers do their planning, budgeting, and spend forecasting. So it sits right at the front of building out your goals, your key metrics, helping you build your funnel, demand funnels for the year. Hey, and actually spitting out, this is how much budget you're going to need to create that level of demand based on what we've done historically. So it's right at the front. And there's not many tools out there that do that. We always jump straight to execution because we're marketers and we like doing work. This sits right at the front. And then once you've built that plan in the tool, you can then manage to the plan, and it helps you track your spend, track your ROI all in one place.
Very cool. In your world as a CMO, like, traditionally, I would assume folks do this either they don't do it or they try to leverage something like Google Sheets to probably hack this all together. So Planful is essentially taking what traditionally has been used in Google Sheets, making it smoother, throwing AI, I even saw on it, like making it more efficient, bringing in better data, that type of thing as well.
Yeah, so it's either done, well, it's done in two places in the real world when you don't have Planful, and that's marketing have their version in a spreadsheet, and finance have their version in their finance system. We argue over the discrepancies between the two. Marketing doesn't have theirs in the finance view because we don't plan, manage, and track spend at a general ledger code level. We don't care about it. Finance have to do that because that's their job. They've got to do all their core accounting. And we never really sit down and like, hey, like, where's the translation between these two things? And we end up pointing at different versions of our own truths. And so Planful helps solve that gap by giving marketers the purpose-built view of how we want to view things, but also translating what we do back into finance terms so that finance can view it.
So here's the finance question. Does this sit under finance's budget or under the marketer's budget when it comes to the tech?
Rowan, the CMO of Planful, doesn't care who pays for it.
I like it. That's awesome.
I'll answer with typically it is a marketing budget. Typically, marketing would be the ones that pay for this because it's, you know, based on all the fiscal responsibility, it's something that is a marketing tool, right? But you can share the costs, and we've seen plenty of organizations do that.
Makes a lot of sense. I love it. So you've got a very interesting history and background and experience. I'd love for you to take me back into time a little bit. Tell me how you got into this position where you're the CMO in this role. And did you aspire for this, or did this happen to you by luck? Like, what? Take me through this journey.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't an aspiration of mine to become a CMO. You know, I was the kid at school that loved playing with computers, loved playing with my friends. You know, I used to have like the old LAN parties where we'd, you know, build a local area network and game and do that sort of stuff. So, you know, gaming, I enjoyed IT and from school, I went and did an IT degree called a Bachelor of Internet Science and Technology. Nice. You know, this was in 2000, and I figured this thing, the internet, was going to become really important. So I wanted to learn more about it. And after that, I got a job at a company that did what we were just talking about, marketing planning, and they built software. And this was before SaaS was SaaS. I just basically started talking to marketers, and I started in customer support and then ended up in customer success and was consulting, and then got into pre-sales, and eventually from my then I stayed a long time in pre-sales and got the opportunity to jump across from pre-sales to product marketing. And that was my first kind of gig as a marketer. I'd been talking to marketers for 12, 13 years and in lots of capacities in mostly big organizations, Fortune 500 organizations. And then I was like, all right, well, I suppose I'll have to, try my hand at this. And it grew from there. I looked after product marketing at another planning company for a couple of years, looking after sales and marketing solutions. And then ended up leading RevOps at a big data company with demand gen and some other teams involved. And then, ended up with the big gig. So, it's been a fun adventure. Definitely not something I would have scripted.
No, I bet. It sounds, I don't want to age you, but you've seen a lot. And I have as well. I won't lie. Like, I've seen a lot over the years, and there's been a lot of change. One of the recent changes that has everybody talking is AI and how it's influencing marketers, business at large. From your perspective, like, how do you think marketers should be, marketing leaders in particular, how should marketing leaders be thinking about AI in the upcoming year and how they think about it with relation to their team?
Yeah. So I would say if you go to your, board and present your annual plan and you haven't built any thinking of AI into that plan, expect a really tough board meeting. Investors, boards are all trying to figure out how we become more efficient with the promise of AI. I would say, generative AI versus AI in general is a different thing, right? And we've been using AI in marketing for a long time. A long time. And so generative AI is a different beast, really. And so I would say, make sure that you communicate, hey, we've been using AI in these ways. This is how we've been doing it. We went from testing this in, 2014 to it becoming a core foundational element of what we do in terms of things like lead routing, lead scoring. Right. Like, that's all machines doing work for us. Yeah. We're going to go through that same phase. We're going to go through, okay, I'm going to experiment with this. And then that experiment is going to be a persistent, consistent part of our business. And so it's exciting. I would also say the things that I think about in my annual planning is what's going to change. Like, I've got to get into prediction mode, and how therefore should I talk to my team about the upcoming change. So there's technologies that are coming up for renewal in my tech stack where I'm going to try and minimize the duration of my contract, because I'm very nervous about what's going to happen to that space. Yeah. And so, 12-month contract, and the team are like, why are we only signing a 12-month contract? It's like, because that industry may go away in 2 years, and I don't want to be holding a 3-year contract for no value.
Exactly.
So that's another big area where I think create agility for yourself in your plan, where you've set aside maybe a test and experimentation budget. Some of these experiments that you do throughout next year will pay off, and you're going to need more money to invest more in them. So set that budget aside, whether you call it the CMO slush fund or you just call it test and experiment budget, make sure it's there. I'd actually make it bigger than you used to have it, because you'll be banking on those efficiencies. And because it's an experiment that has paid off, you will want to double down and spend the money on it because it's going to yield the returns.
Right.
And if it doesn't, then you can just put it back into the persistent programs that are already working. So I would do that. And that's what we're doing is really heavily evaluating our tech, looking at where we believe that changes may come. And I'm not going to call any parts of my tech stack out, but I'm being diligent about that. I have signed some short-term contracts where I'm like, look, I need it now, but I'm not sure it's going to need it in 6 to 12 months. So, and then set aside more for experimentation than you used to.
Makes sense. There's so many changes happening in the space. I mean, like, it's nonstop with algorithms and the way that certain technologies are using them, and like guidance from other companies and how they're managing expectations. It's like, you really do need to be more stringent on saying, okay, locking in 12 months might have been a great idea in 2019, but like, things are changing. Yeah. So no, I 100%. How do you trickle that thinking down to your team? Because it's not just yourself, like your CMO, but you're just the only marketing person in the entire org. How do you foster a culture of agility, as you mentioned?
Yeah. So, well, there's two ways of doing that. So number one, and, you know, we have a weekly team call where we talk about, you know, lots of things, but I'm constantly just, where's my head at? What am I doing? I am speaking at lots of events, so I like to report back to my team about what I've learned. Like, hey, this was really interesting at this event. Like, these folks were talking about this, or I hadn't thought about that. You know, like, when we go to events, we're there to consume content as well as deliver it. And I want to report back, like, because the team don't get to go out and do all of that. So we do spend a lot of time doing that. I use Loom updates as a way of delivering that. Loom, or you can just post straight into Slack now. Yeah. I try a lot of that. I've actually run a full QBR recently where every functional leader just presented, talk about brevity. You know, we used to get on the 3-hour QBR and everyone had talked for 7 to 10 minutes. Yeah. I don't know if I should be the team will be fine. All right. And so we did a QBR where they all submitted, you know, we gave the template, they submitted their, you know, I said 5 minutes, everyone goes over. It's like when you ask for the budget, they give you more than you're giving them, right? 1.8x speed, listening to it, get the AI to transcribe everything. Then I write down all my questions about what they just presented. Right. And then instead of having a 3-hour everyone presenting session, we consumed the content over a 1.5-2 week period.
Right.
And then we had the best 2.5 hours of conversation we've ever had in a QBR.
Right. That's cool.
We separated content delivery versus content conversation. And so that was a really fun experiment. And I'll be running my QBRs like that again.
Love it.
And yeah, we just try and talk a lot, and I'm, you know, I try and do it as asynchronously as I can. My team's everywhere, and I think that fosters an interesting, like, just share what's on your mind at that time. And I think that really helps the team feel connected, even though we're, you know, like, I'm in an office right now, but most of my team aren't in an office.
Right. No, that's cool. That's awesome. With the shift to async communication, how do you think teams should be, like, should you be presenting your finance, your marketing annual plan to finance teams async as well, or should those happen always live? Like, what's your take on how those should be communicated?
I think within my team, we're able to get to this level of async because we've been working together a while. We know each other quite well. I think we've got to that level of you know, team bonding and team harmony where that makes sense. If I was presenting to a brand new sales leader, I would want to meet with them, like, and if that's me flying to them, then I'm going to do that face to face. So I would say it depends. I'm sorry to give an it depends answer. I hate doing that.
Go to marketer answer. I like it.
But yeah, I think it depends on your level of knowledge and your level of partnership to date. Like, I'm happy to do that with my CFO and VP of finance right now, but we've been working together a long time. And so I don't think that that's a good idea. If there's a big shift that's happened, like if you weren't presenting in this way before and now you're presenting in a financial and commercial way, and that's a big departure from normal, Right. I'd try and do that face to face.
Very cool. Okay. I want to go back a bit to one of our questions in our dialogues around kind of your early career, where you started, but more so a reflection. So you're talking to Rowan. Rowan just finished their degree. They're going out into the wild world of technology. They want to work in the internet world, but they don't know where they'll end up. What advice would you give yourself back then around like the path and journey to where you are today? Like, what advice would you give someone who's in that seat? They're in university. They just wrapped up. They're like, I want to be eventually the CMO. What do I need to be thinking about and trying to do that I wouldn't have even learned in university?
Yeah. It's hard. I think I've kind of demonstrated to myself, like we talked about this, I've demonstrated it to myself in that I've done this. And so the answer I would say is like embrace change and embrace opportunities. And just by doing that, you may not, I don't think our paths are set. Right. And I don't think we know enough when we're, well, I certainly didn't when I was 21, 22, like I had no idea where I was going. And I'll tell you a funny story. Right before I took the job, that ended up moving me out to the UK and moving me here to America. And, you know, I got three wonderful kids and met my wife in the UK. Before I took that job, I went and did a coal mining certificates to become a coal miner.
Really?
That's so, that's you know, and so like you can embrace opportunities. Like that could have led me down a very different path, but I could still be enjoying my life and having a different thing. So I would say embrace opportunities, embrace change. Don't view them as, oh, this is setting me off my path. It could be pointing you to a whole new path of you know, enjoyment and opportunity that you never even thought about. Right. And so do that. Change is a constant in our world. It's only happening faster than ever. Embrace it. It's actually the only constant in life is everything's going to change every day.
Yeah.
So enjoy it.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's say some uncomfortable changes hit some marketers, which it has. Yeah. Yeah. How do you stay positive about the change when you didn't want the change? AKA there's layoffs, there's companies being shut down, there's boards doing crazy board things and CEOs doing things, and then people are saying we have to leave. Like, what advice do you give someone who still wants it but just got stung really hard? Market and the industry at large, like what advice do you give them?
Yeah, it's a hard one. And number one, have a pity party for yourself, right?
I love that. I have never heard that, but I love that.
It's okay to be sad, right? It's okay to be upset. It's okay to like have that pity party, but you can't hold on to it forever.
Right.
So have the pity party, cry, whinge, speak to your peers, do whatever you need to do. But then you have to go, all right, that's done. Right. Now what am I doing?
Right.
And we always have a choice, but at the same time, choice is an illusion. And I think that you've got to have that pity party to just grieve for whatever that path that you thought you were on was on, and now move on and figure it out. What am I going to do now? And most likely it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
But doing hard things got you to where you are today. So you've done hard things. So just do more of them.
I love it. Choice is an illusion. You're going to have to double down on that. What do you mean?
Yeah. So it comes from a book called It Takes What It Takes by a gentleman by the name of Trevor Moad. And, He was basically a psychology coach for elite athletes. Probably his most famous athlete that he works with or worked with is Russell Wilson. And he has this concept of like positive thinking doesn't get you anywhere.
Right.
But negative thinking will actually create negative thoughts and actually manifest negativity. So he has this concept of neutral thinking. And if, like, you know, if your goal is to be absolutely ripped and jacked, then you don't have a choice about what you eat or what you do with your day. You have to eat in a disciplined manner. You have to work out consistently for long periods of consistency. If you want to be great at copywriting, there's no shortcuts. You have to write all the effing time. If you want to be, you know, the greatest soccer player, you have to do the work. And so that's kind of the illusion of choice. Like, we, you know, we sit down and I'm like, I can choose what I want to have for dinner. I can do that. But if I've got a goal in mind that says I can't do that, I can't go and have that, you know, lovely pizza because I'm trying to be at 5% body fat. I'm not doing any of this, by the way.
but if
but whatever your end goal is, like, if you want to be a great CMO, some of the choices that are out there, they're not actually choices. They're an illusion, and you just have to do it.
That's it.
We think of them as choices, but we've just got to do the work.
Right. It makes sense. I don't want to die young, so I can't eat Doritos every night for supper. It's like, I would love to, but I know I can't actually do that. Like, Doritos.
If you want to play with your grandkids,
I can't do that.
You've got to be continuing to be somewhat athletic all through the next 30, 40 years of your life.
That's it. It's not really a choice. I love that. That's a great take. You seem like you might be well read. So do you have a go-to book that you you like or that you read often? Is there any specific books that are favorites of yours?
That is one. That's one I recommend to my team. It Takes What It Takes. I think it's a really good understanding of your own mindset. And I think that's pretty crucial. I read a lot. The Daily Dad.
I'm a big fan as well. I love it.
I read that every day. That's just a good reminder every day, like, you know, what I want to do with the kids, how I want to think about parenting. And a book that I always come back to is Good to Great by Jim Collins. I think there's just so many fundamentals in there that you could read that, you know, every 2 years. And then another one that I always recommend is, and I always talk about with my team is Cialdini's book, Principles, Influence, sorry. It's all about behavioral psychology. And I think as a marketer, the more that you think about how we influence people and the tools and techniques, and what I love about that is it comes from the world of the practical, not necessarily the fluff stuff. It's like, this is what happens in the real world.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's true. I love it. Well, I'll be sure to list those in the show notes so folks can check them out. You mentioned tools and technologies. Are you able to speak to some of your favorite tech stack tools and some of the tools that you do plan to kind of continue to invest in? So is there anything that stands out today as like, oh, this is one that is truly a technology that our team loves and is getting a lot of value out of today?
Yeah, I can tell you. So, I mean, obviously Planful. So number one, we plan, track, spend, manage. And, you know, we're a very efficient marketing team, and that helps us be efficient. Other areas that I found efficiency in is we're heavy users of Sixth Sense. We're heavy users of metadata. We found that that's brought us some real benefits. Awesome. We're a Marketo shop, a Salesforce shop. We're using lots of technology here. I've probably got too much, like every other marketer out there. I'm a big fan.
Right. So you can see it all.
They're the tools that, you know, we're kind of big proponents of here. But happy to share my tech stack with anyone if they're curious.
I like it. That's amazing. Appreciate that. When it comes to leading your team, you mentioned communicating and over communicating, et cetera. Do you have like your own perspective on like what type of leader you strive to be and how you think about leading people?
Yeah, I had a coach, and you know, there's I think different styles of leadership, and you need to take different styles at different times. Right. My tendency is to be a participatory leader and a negotiating leader, so I like being involved. Other types of leadership include directive leadership, which some people love, other people don't, and consensus-driven leadership. So, you know, you've got different styles of leadership. You need to pick the style for, you know, what's authentic to you. You know, as I'm maturing and continually evolving, like we all do, I'm starting to become less participatory, primarily because my team's getting bigger and I can't be involved. And so it's like, okay, well, now I just really need to be really good at setting expectations and getting the F out of the way, because I've hired great people. and that's hard. You go from being for those that aren't leaders yet, you go from being a great individual contributor and you get promoted to be a leader. So what do you think you need to do more of? Contributing. You keep thinking that, you know, oh well, what got me here is all my hard work and all my dedication, and you've got to quickly learn that actually, you know, you've been given a new job, which is to make everyone else successful, and sometimes the best way to do that is to just get the F out of the way. Constantly evolving. I wouldn't say I'm always trying to read and learn. And you asked about reading, and I just read Phil Jackson's book called 11 Rings.
Nice. Such a good
book. Yeah. I learned a lot in that book. And, you know, running through my head right now is like all the leadership statements that he had, where he's managing some of the biggest egos in the world. My problems are okay.
Unless you have a Rodman on your team, which is a bigger problem.
Thankfully, I don't have a Rodman on my team.
It was fascinating to read his story and how he managed the Bulls and then the Lakers. It was great read. I strongly recommend it as well. So I'd be curious, like, outside of all of the day-to-day work with like marketing, et cetera, like what else has your attention these days? Are you spending a lot of time thinking about AI? Is that showing up in a real way yet for you folks in the way that you think about marketing? Or is it still kind of very early stage for generative AI in particular? Like, is it showing up yet for you and
your day-to-day? No, it's absolutely showing up. I mean, I would say I'm someone, you know, we talked about, you know, I had a coach, and one of my challenges as a leader is that I'm so open to new things that I tend to often race to new things without thinking them through. So I'm always trying to double check myself on that. With generative AI, I don't think you can run fast enough towards it. Right. I think you should be sprinting. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be open and aware of like what's going to, you know, all sorts of changes. But I think it is one of those big inflection points, like a lot of people are saying. Yeah. So I'm really experimenting. I'm really excited about it. I think we're at a huge disruptive moment, and that there's big opportunities to be had if you can catch the right wave, so to speak. But there's also a big risk in you know, paddling for that wave, that the next one's bigger and better and you get the wrong wave. So you've got to be cautious, but I you know, just catch as many waves as you can, I think.
I hear you. I agree. One of the things we didn't touch much on is like the partnership between marketing and sales. So working with sales, how do you as a CMO think about that collaboration around revenue generation at large? Like, are you speaking regularly? Like, what's the cadence? Can you talk to me through like the way you would advise people to manage their relationship with their sales team?
Yeah, I get to cheat a little on this one because I spent about 12 years in pre-sales. So most of my team think of me, and some new salespeople into the company, I get on a sales call and like, what just happened there? you know, they don't expect that from their CMO. I would say it's a skill I've always had. And for a long time, I actually was in the sales performance management space. So account segmentation and scoring, territory planning, quota planning, compensation design. So I probably understand more than most. And so that makes me slightly dangerous and probably slightly annoying for a sales leader. Yeah, I spend a lot of time with sales. Number one, my incentives, so come back to incentives, my incentives are based on sales performance. So, you know, every piece of pipeline I create, I care about because I want a salesperson to go and close that piece of pipeline. Like I want to help them. And, you know, marketing is about helping grow the business, right? We're partners to sales. I'm not a, you know, someone who says sales marketing should work for sales. I think we're absolute partners and we got to work together to create the best outcome for the business. I speak to sales pretty much every day, consistently partnering with them on various things. I find it a really fun part of the job. And my team probably would say that I spend too much time with the sales team and not enough time with the marketing team. So maybe I over-index there sometimes, but I enjoy the world of sales. I think it's a great profession, and I really try and lean into it a lot because I think it helps us be better marketers and really try and demonstrate the value that, you know, whatever your product, platform, company does, the more time you spend with sales, the better you can communicate that value proposition to pre-customers.
I love it. Let's say someone's in the marketing scene and they don't even know, like they've never sat down with sales to really understand like what happens, and they're even kind of nervous about it. What would you advise them to start thinking about to build that relationship and trust with sales to really start to build that connection between the two departments?
So a couple of little simple techniques, right? If you're in demand gen or ops and you're really curious about sales, follow the life cycle of a lead,
right?
You know, jump on the first call if you can, or listen to the gong call. You know, speak to the pre-sales person. Like if you're nervous about speaking to the sales rep and trying to ride along a deal, do it digitally. Follow the data, follow what's going on, listen to the gong calls or the, you know, whatever tool you're using. Look at when people get included in the deals, you know, follow someone's calendar, read everything that goes on, all the back and forth. It's one of the most tracked parts of our business, if not the most tracked part of our business. So don't tell me there's no information for you to learn about sales, right? And then go through that, follow a couple of deals over maybe a quarter, see what you learn. And then jump on the salesperson and say, hey, man, I've been following along. Like, I'm really curious. Like, A, can I ride along a deal and just be in the background? Like, I'm always wanting to learn. And then just speak to them about, like, what happened in that deal? Like, take them out for a beer, buy them a virtual coffee, do whatever it is that you need to do. But they're going to appreciate marketing's curiosity. You're going to learn something. And so I would do it that way. If you're in an organization with a great sales and marketing partnership, walk over to the salesperson and say, hey, I want to ride along a couple of deals and I'm super curious as to what you do. So can we just have a weekly 20-minute check-in? I know your time's really valuable, but this will help me be a better marketer for you.
I love it. I love it. That's awesome. Yeah, it's a great call. I think opening the door and just saying, all right, I'm going to, one, take the initiative to review and study and understand your world, and then take the initiative to say, let's connect one-to-one and build that relationship is key. It's pure gold. I love it. All right. I've got a series of two questions that we ask every time that we have someone on, and I want to go through these. So before I became a CMO, I wish I would have known that
More about behavioral psychology.
Oh, I like it. I'm going to ask a follow-up question to, is that related to managing people or to attract your
leaders?
Both. I love it.
Both. Cool. I think, you know, it's something that I learned later on in life. I was more about like technical proficiency and less about the soft skills. Yeah. And, you know, the last, I don't know, 10 years, I've been really diving into the soft skills, and I really like enjoy it.
That's cool. I love it. In order to be a CMO, you've learned that the single most important skill to develop would be?
Understanding customers.
Right. And what do you do to better understand them? How would you try to understand the customers?
I speak to them a lot. That's, I think, you know, just common sense. Speak to them, ask them questions, be super curious, and speak to your sales team. As I said, I spend a lot of time with sales, like what's making these customers tick. And then, so you get your kind of like, you know, eagle kind of flying down and looking at something from, you know, 5 feet, then zoom out and look at the macro data and then say, okay, well, with these two views in mind, here's how I'm kind of parsing the world and how we should contribute in marketing.
I love it. Rowan, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. This has been great. I think folks are going to get a ridiculous amount of value out of this. So is there anywhere that people should be going to find out, learn more about you? Where else can they go to hear a little bit more from you and your take on life and business, et cetera?
Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, X. LinkedIn is where I post mostly all my business stuff. X is where I chat about golf and rugby. Fun little side hobbies of mine. So most of you would care about my work life and what I do career-wise, so I would go to LinkedIn.
I like it. Well, thank you, Rowan. Really appreciate the time. It's been great chatting with you. Enjoy the rest of your week, day, and thank you again for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thanks, Ross. Really appreciate it.